You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Jake Jacobson.
And I'm Cade Young. This is the WFHB local news for Wednesday, June 23rd, 2021.
Later in the program, Perry Township is offering temporary relief for residents who no longer have a place to stay due to this past weekend's flooding. In today's feature report, we speak with Dan Combs, Perry Township trustee, about the township's effort to provide hotel rooms for displaced residents.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we have coverage on the city's decision to reopen the road that runs through Lower Cascades Park. More coming up in today's headlines. But first, your local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Wednesday, June 23rd. I'm Katherine Patterson. A man in Bloomington declared missing after the flooding on Friday was found dead on Sunday. Colton Bowie was found in the early morning by a search party consisting of family and friends, according to a press release from the Bloomington Police Department. A friend Bowie was with on the night of the flood said that Bowie tried to drive during the flood, only to slide off the side of the road and hit an unknown object. Bowie's friend was able to escape through the car window. However, he couldn't find him after that. On Monday, 8 students at Indiana University have sued over the vaccination mandate required to return to campus in the fall. They say it violates Indiana's new law, vaccine passports, as well as the 14th Amendment, the right to bodily autonomy. IU spokesperson Chuck Carney told the Indiana Daily Student that he is, quote, confident the university will prevail in this case. The attorney general's opinion affirmed our right to require the vaccine, end quote. This Monday was International Day of Yoga. Local Bloomington studios celebrated by offering free classes, hosting outdoor events, and reflection. For those looking to get involved in yoga, the Hot Room, located on College Mall Road, will be offering a free yoga class to anyone who mentions the recent IDS article written about their work. That's all for your local news. For WFHB, I'm Katherine Patterson.
Director of Public Works, Adam Wason, talked about the city's recommendation to reopen the road that runs through Lower Cascades Park at the June 22nd Bloomington Board of Public Works meeting. He revealed that accessibility and safety issues played a large part in the department's decision.
There was also obviously numerous concerns cited with traffic from the local neighborhoods during large IU events, sporting events in particular. There were some concerns about the mixed use issues of the road. We fielded some complaints from even those that were using it as pedestrians, with some more of the competitive cyclists going through at speeds that were felt to be unsafe by those other users. There was general safety and access for public safety departments and parks and recreation crews.
Wason added the reopening would include road maintenance and upgrades. He focused on changes aimed at making the road safer for pedestrians and cyclists.
So we'll look to install traffic calming devices according to engineering and MUTCD standards for a parkway, install additional speed signage to keep speeds low in addition to those traffic calming devices, even considering some more of like the signboard, you know, here's how fast you're going type of signage to really get folks to understand we want to reduce speeds throughout this entire parkway and throughout this entire area.
City Councilmember Matt Flaherty expressed disappointment over the decision. He said the closure was an opportunity to create another safe route for cyclists and pedestrians around town, including a bike route to Bloomington High School North.
I think Safe Routes is really important. The council passed a resolution in 2019 in which high school students asked for safe biking routes to school, high school in particular. And the city council passed that resolution. I don't think there's a safe biking route to Bloomington High School North right now for a lot of attendees.
The next Board of Public Works meeting is on July 6th.
The Bloomington Board of Park Commissioners voted on whether to reopen Old State Road 37 in Lower Cascades Park. At the June 22nd meeting, Parks and Recreation's Director Paula McDevitt expanded further on the city's decision to reopen the road through Lower Cascades. She said the city had received hundreds of responses to surveys, which favored reopening the road to vehicle traffic.
We had the experience survey that ran the last 15 months. We had 458 respondents, and 52% indicated that they definitely wanted to keep the road as a multi-use trail. So again, we had a lot of feedback. The impact survey, we had 394 respondents and had a question on when asked to rank on a scale of 1 to 7, support of different options. The 360 respondents indicated that reopening both lanes to vehicle got a score of 5.6 average rating, while the permanent closing of the road was a 2.2 and having only one lane open to vehicles was a 2.6.
Commissioner Israel Herrera asked about damages caused by flash flooding. McDevitt revealed that parts of the road had been damaged and would be repaired. Resident Greg Alexander opposed reopening the road to vehicle traffic. He cited Bloomington's previous plans for Lower Cascades as a factor in his opposition.
A bike and ped connection through the park has been in the city's plan since the 2008 Greenways plan. The 2011 Journey to Platinum plan called for it explicitly to connect Miller Showers Park to North High School and Griffey Lake. In 2018, City Council approved $2 million of bond money to complete the connection to the Miller Showers Park. The Griffey Lake connection has been completed, but the other two have not. And Parks has already spent almost all of the bond money without providing the connection. We need to provide that connection. Parks has made the commitment to City Council to provide that connection. If we don't have that connection, how much longer are we going to be waiting for the very first safe bike or ped connection north of the bypass?
Commissioners voted to approve the recommendation 3-0. The recommendation will return to the Board of Public Works in a future meeting. The Monroe County Community School Corporation School Board discussed meal prices for the 2021 to 2022 school year. At the June 22nd meeting, Director of Business Operations John Kenny presented a plan that would raise MCCSC school meal prices alongside federal guidelines for the upcoming school year. He added that waivers for free meals introduced during the pandemic would continue through 2022.
Pandemic waivers for school nutrition programs are extended to June 30, 2022. The school nutrition program waivers include school breakfast, school lunch, and after-school snacks for enrolled students only. The administration recommends continuation of the USDA option to serve meals for free to all students under the Seamless Summer Option, or SSO, until June 30th, 2022.
Board members voted to approve meal prices 7-0. After board members voted to approve contracts later in the meeting, Board member Jacinda Townsend commented on the lack of contracts made with minority-owned companies.
I've been on the board for about a year now, and I have yet to see us make a contract with any minority-owned company, and I would love to see us going forward consider that. We need to start doing that.
The next regularly scheduled school board meeting is July 27th.
Now it's time for your feature reports. Up first, Perry Township is offering temporary relief for residents who no longer have a place to stay due to the flooding over the weekend. I spoke with Dan Combs, Perry Township trustee, about the township's effort to provide hotel rooms for displaced residents. And here now is that interview. I'm talking with Dan Combs, Perry Township Trustee. Welcome to the WFHB Local News, Dan.
Thank you.
So, Dan, first off, would you touch on Perry Township's temporary assistance for those who do not have a place to stay due to the flooding over the weekend?
Well, Perry Township's main function is providing emergency services for people who, through unanticipated events, whether issues of income, poverty, or even this catastrophic flooding, people who cannot provide for their own shelter, utilities, food, et cetera. And this is just an extension of what we do every day because of the catastrophic nature of it.
Now, as far as eligibility is concerned, who is eligible for a week's stay at a hotel?
It's tricky. Residents, number one, people who are actually displaced. And number two is initially pretty much anyone that was displaced. Then after the initial assessments and plans are made, it comes down to a matter of income and alternative resources. In other words, someone with a McMansion is most likely not going to qualify for any extended relief.
I see. That makes sense. And, you know, kind of to follow up with that, what kind of proof of displacement are you looking for?
We're confirming with hand, we're confirming with the landlords, and also we're the caseworkers here are intimately familiar with the township and locations. And, you know, someone connects with an address, an ID, or a piece of mail that shows they were there. That's enough to get the emergency started. Landlord confirmation can do it too. So this isn't the first time that we've done this. In particular, the area that we're seeing people from, I believe it was 2008, Wilmington experienced really severe flooding one afternoon. And I believe these units flooded then. If not, it was units immediately adjacent to these units. We're familiar with this region. I've been around a long time, so is my caseworkers.
You know, moving on, what hotels are you offering displacement for?
Right now, the Travelodge is, we can't force any landlord or provider to accept our vouchers. Right now, the Travelodge on East Third Street, is accepting our vouchers. If that fills, we will work through Shalom Beacon in finding other places where we can house people. But I think we're going to see the end of our dislocated people this afternoon. And right now we're looking at eight households were disrupted in that one location.
Would you touch on the importance of lending a helping hand after a community crisis?
Well, it's Indiana. You know, some people call us backwards for having a township system. But really, it's forward-looking in that, as I said, we're intimately familiar with the residences in Bloomington, in particular in Monroe County, in Perry Township, in particular rental properties. So instead of having to contact an agency in Indianapolis or, you know, even FEMA from the federal government, where then it takes them a little bit to mobilize and come down and actually examine the properties and go through the bureaucratic necessities of dispensing funds, we're there, we're here, and we see people without homes regular or people who've been evicted, things like that. So it's not putting us on a crisis footing. This is what we do.
What other resources do you suggest for those who no longer have a place to stay after the flooding?
there's quite a few groups. HAND is working, HAND Wilmington Housing and Neighborhood Development is working to direct people to longer term resources. We also would. One of the things we're finding out is several of these units were Section 8 funded through public housing, and which means they were low income people to begin with. And there's options there. And I would anticipate legal services organization, because just as when someone signs a lease with a landlord and that obligates that person to provide money to the landlord, when the landlord signs a lease, that obligates them the other way. They're obligated to provide premises. And, we're hearing rumblings, that there's some walkaways here on landlords, that they're not going to repair the units. They're not going to assist the tenants that are there. So we will send people to legal services organization also. And I would look for the city to become more involved just because this is in the city and these are city residents. So long-term solution, we're not set up to do that. Right now our vouchers are for 1 week, but that doesn't mean they can't be extended. At 5 days into it, we're going to reevaluate and see what the long-term prospects are. Things are just now coming together. United Way is trying to coordinate some activities. Townships, our standard referrals, but this is going to be a little different. Having 7 households trying to find affordable housing all at once may not sound like much, but that low-cost housing in Bloomington is at a premium to begin with. And so even this little surge disrupts the normal rhythm of providing low-cost housing.
Now, Dan, before we part ways, is there anything else that you'd like to mention that I might have missed?
The people who've been damaged have also lost belongings. I don't even know that the assessments have been completed yet, how much of their personal possessions can be salvaged, furniture, kitchenware, et cetera. So within a few days, there should be some indication that of what people need in excess of what comes through vouchers. So there may be a need for community donations for several of these households. That, like I said, will come in a few days when everything's been established. Right now, we're just trying to get people in a room. I was really kind of surprised that our large national assistance organizations just offered cots in a gymnasium, that no one offered to put people in hotels, which has always been the standard. In other words, we're behind the curve. This is Wednesday, this happened Friday evening, and so we're just now catching up today. So for somewhere for 5 days, these people have been living a very disrupted life. And now is the time that we need to focus to get them back into stability.
Well, Dan Combs, Perry Township Trustee, thank you so much for talking with WFHB.
Okay, no problem at all. And you have a good afternoon.
If you live in Perry Township and are in need of assistance, call 812-336-3713. Or you can send an email to perry.twp.investigations@gmail.com for the Emergency Assistance Program.
And now it's time for Better Beware, our weekly consumer watchdog segment on the WFHB local news. the series exposes scams in South Central Indiana. We turn to host Richard Fish for more.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
How old are you? And how old are the people you really care about? I'm thinking about parents, grandparents, friends, and neighbors. Because these days, the FBI is warning that older Americans are increasingly becoming the juiciest targets for scammers and swindlers. Their Elder Fraud Report, just recently released, says that in 2020, they received 105,301 reports of fraud on people 60 years old and above, almost 30% of the total number of reports. But of course, we know that's only part of the picture. Many victims of fraud never report their losses to the FBI or other authorities simply because they're too embarrassed to admit they've been suckered. That's especially true of older people who don't want to look foolish to their families or have people think they're getting frail and vulnerable. So that number is significantly low, and so are the others in the report. Last year, the average loss for older people was $9,175 each. 1,971 elderly victims lost more than $100,000 each, and the total loss among older folks was at least $1 billion. The most common kind of scam in the report is outright extortion, like those phony phone calls that demand money to keep an elderly person's house from being foreclosed or keep them from being arrested for non-payment of taxes or missing jury duty or some such dodge. But the scams that suck the most money out of older people are long-term confidence games, where the crook develops an ongoing relationship with the victim. They use romance, religion, military backgrounds, any kind of association to build the victim's trust over time, and eventually start asking for money. This kind of scam netted at least $281 million from elderly Americans just during the year 2020. So many times, an older person is easy prey because they're lonely. And these days, the con artist doesn't need to be close by and can adopt any appearance they want by sending fake pictures. Thanks to the internet, a successful romance scammer can cultivate multiple victims using multiple fake identities at the same time. Older people also fall victim to fake online sales where they pay money and get nothing, and to the classic tech support scam where someone pretends to be from Apple or Microsoft or some company that makes computers or software, especially antivirus programs, and tells the victim they have a problem with their computer, which the kindly faker can easily fix if the elderly victim will just let them in. If you're over 60, it's time you did some research and learning about scams and swindles. And if you're under 60, it's time you had a talk with your family members and friends about the crooks out there who target older people. The 2020 Elder Fraud Report from the Federal Bureau of Investigation is online. Search it up and learn. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Katherine Patterson and Jake Jacobson in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Better Beware is produced by Richard Fish.
Our feature was produced by Cade Young. Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Our engineer and executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, I'm Jake Jacobson.
And I'm Cade Young. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. you can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming at wfhb.org.
You can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for What's the Word? Rock and Roll, the evolution, influence, and energy of a genre. Brought to you by the Modern Language Association, coming up next on WFHB. You've been listening to the WFHB local news on WFHB Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a WFHB local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. Feel free to check out the WFHB local news archive at wfhb.org to find newscasts, individual stories, and catch a live feed of the WFHB local news. We are local, longer,